And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. And Kyle, as we sit here and prepare to take it to the desert, as we prepare for the Waste Management Open, we're doing a little bit of bookkeeping. Our West Coast swing is in full effect. We talked to you on Sunday night with our instant reaction. We've got some good sit-downs to get to before we talk to our good buddy Sean Martin here on the other side. So you got Jim Nantz, you got Lexi Thompson, those full interviews coming up here in a minute, but as you've had some time to unpack your bags and, you know, reacquaint yourself to your wife and children, you know, what are some of the lingering memories from the PGA merchandise show?
Yeah, you know, it's a weird week. It's part of it is a lot of fun, and part of it you get to the end and you're like, wow, it's probably time to go home. But the part that's fun is that you get to see and talk to all these people that you either don't see very often, so other writers and broadcasters and stuff like that, or that you're kind of only watching on TV throughout the year, whether you're watching them play like Lexi, you're watching them in the booth like Jim Nantz. And so it's fun to have these, you know, I'm cooped up in the shed all day, so it's fun to have these in real life conversations and you know, just like, the thing that I was talking to somebody about yesterday is that I just like talking about golf,
right?
Like whether it's women's golf, whether it's, I talked to Lexi about the women's amateur, that was fascinating. Talking to Nantz about Torrey, which he was getting ready to call to broadcast. I mean, I love talking about the golf, and most of the people that are at that show, and specifically the people that I talk to, do as well.
What is the most If there are a lot of like-minded people, and the one thing that I've heard not only from you but from other people involved at the event is that it is the conversations. It is just being in certain rooms. If you are, you know, an executive and you're trying to make sure you make the connections, it's the fact that in a sport that is so spread out, it is one of the few times in the calendar year where it feels like you get a lot of the big players all under the same roof. What was the most And we don't necessarily have to broadcast the name, but correct me if I'm wrong, there is some really, really off the wall, absurd, like 3 a.m. infomercial type stuff at this event, right?
Yeah, there is. I tried to, like, last year I was fully like dove into all that stuff, and this year I actually actively tried to stay away from it because it can take you to some pretty interesting places and more than that, to some pretty interesting conversations. And so actually the place, you know, I was kind of around, you know, I hung out at Callaway a little bit, hung out at, well, I did the Lexi interview was at the Cobra Puma booth. So there's some different, like, you can tell who the kind of the big dogs are there, but the place that I found to be pretty intriguing that we hung out a little bit on Thursday was this booth, or this company, I guess, called Full Swing. And this is it's basically a simulator, but it's not like going to, you know, your local golf store and like banging a few balls into this, you know, screen that they have or whatever. It's much more realistic. It's really impressive, and it's being repped by Tiger,
ooh,
by Justin Rose,
ooh,
by all these big guys. I think Steph Curry is a partner with them, and of course, the starting price of one of these is like, I think, $21,000. So it's not really in my wheelhouse, but
I'm sorry, I was like, my birthday is in April. I was sitting here running numbers until you just threw out that $21,000. So this is not a net that I'm gonna be able to put up in my side yard.
No, but you can play. I mean, it's crazy. Like, we did this, and you can switch sports. Like, you don't have to just do golf. We did this thing where you can kick field goals on it. You can throw like deep slants to these receivers that are running across the. It's crazy. It's awesome. And it was. I just hung out there for half the day on Thursday. It's called Full Swing Golf. And I talked to some of their guys. They know what they're doing. It's an impressive company, and yeah, pretty cool product.
All right, so first let's go with some highlights from your sit down with Jim Nantz. He was there obviously with the Vineyard Vines. He was very excited, a big announcement for him, but You know, he does spend some time also talking about his expectations for the season. Anything else you want to give to the people to set this one up?
Well, I think the thing about Jim that always strikes me, he's obviously it's funny being around him because everybody wants a piece of his time and his, and more than that, just his attention. You know, you see all these people, like, you can see it coming from, like, if you just observe people around him, you can see all these dynamics in play. And he is so good. I don't know if I've ever met anybody better about giving you 100% of his attention. He won't give it to you forever because he's only got a finite amount of time like everybody else. But when he's locked into you, he gives you 100% of his attention. None of it is divided elsewhere. He's not looking at his phone. He's not looking at another person. He's not thinking about what's next. He's locked into you. And I don't know, that characteristic is something that I would like. I try to do that. I try to emulate that. And I don't know if I've seen anybody do it better than he does.
All right. Kyle Porter and Jim Nantz.
Well, speaking of Pebble, we got the season coming up. You're going out to the West Coast to start kind of that swing later on today. What are the big questions you have about the season? There's so much going on right now. What to you stands out as the biggest questions?
No, I don't know this is questions as much as anticipation. I mean, we all want to know, and I see everything that you write. You do a phenomenal job. And as we all do, we kind of always start with TW. Yeah. We start not with Tom Watson, Tiger Woods these days, TW, or Tom Weisgoff, but Tiger Woods. And this being his calendar debut, I think we're all anxious to see what that's going to look like. Now, I think one thing that's really underplayed, Kyle, is his pursuit of 83.
Yeah.
He's at 80 wins, and Snead's got the all-time record at 82. I think it's been very much underplayed. And I think that if he gets this next win, let's say it happens on the West Coast at L.A. or this week at Torrey, now he's within one of tying that mark. This isn't the major championship milestone, but it's second. And I wrote about it recently in Golf Digest, that's coming out in March, about how this is something that's going to gain steam this season, this storyline.
Yeah.
Because if it falls, I think it's the story of the year in golf.
Well, and the one that everybody always talks about is the 18, right? It's the majors. And
that's it.
And that's the one that you're like, is he going to have Phil's entire career in, you know, in his 40s? Phil's got five majors. Is Tiger going to have five majors in his 40s? It seems more reasonable to look at the 83.
And it's by the way, it's an incredible achievement. I mean, 80 wins is, it's indescribable.
And to do it in how few tournaments he's played compared to a lot of the other guys.
We're not going to ever see. I mean, no one's going to be in our lifetime, I don't believe, ever to get to 80. And now, like I say, Tiger could be matching Sam's 82 or exceeding it. And, you know, I was there the first time those two ever met. I wasn't in their sphere at the moment, but I was at that tournament.
Yeah.
The 92 a tournament at Riviera when Tiger was 16 and a high school sophomore. So he gets the exemption to play in a tour event. At the time, he was the youngest ever. It just so happened that tournament always honors a champion of its past. Sam was the honoree that year in 92.
Yeah.
So in the practice, not the practice, in the Pro-Am on Wednesday, Tiger was playing with an old television actor of a renown named Peter Falk. He was Columbo. And he got to the 10th hole, and who strolled down the hill from the clubhouse to watch him hit the tee shot was Sam Snead. And Tiger hits the tee shot, and he figures, well, you know, he felt his presence. He figured he was heading right back up to the clubhouse. Well, he got onto the 11th tee, and he looked behind him, and Sam was still there. He had followed him for an entire hole, followed a 16-year-old sophomore. And Tiger, as the story goes, hooked his tee shot. He was fighting the hooks leading into the tournament. But Snead said something like, hey, I hear you're doing a really great job. Keep up the great work. And then he had it in. Well, who would have known that that was a fateful meeting, that Sam was actually witnessing a guy that one day could take away a record that probably Snead, you know, went to his grave thinking, you know, Jack got to 73.
Yeah.
I'm at 82. No one's ever gonna get there. But, of course, they would have crossed paths years later, a lot of champions – or a handful of champions dinners before Sam passed at Augusta. But that first time they met was in 92, and I was there to broadcast it and did the first interview with Tiger when he walked off the course. Just missed the cut by a couple. But it's going to be a great year for the game. I'm just thrilled to death to get it started this week with my old CBS crew.
I've seen some of the stuff Tiger wore in 92. He could have used some Vineyard Vines back then, too.
You know, he was wearing back then because he looked up to my buddy Freddie Couples, and he was wearing shirts that didn't really fit him. He was wearing the old Ashworth shirt that Fred wore. And I was
sleeves down to here.
Oh, sleeves were beyond the elbow. And, and anyway, all these young stars of the game, you mentioned it a moment ago, to try to get 5 major championships, I don't put anything past them, so I'm not going to say it can't happen. But there are so many guys. I know that's a constant refrain, but it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's just
it's fun, too.
It just imagine what this is going to be like with our new schedule and a meaningful tournament every month, starting with the players.
Yeah.
And then Augusta. And then the PGA, which I think is going to be Tiger's. Believe it or not, I think that's his best chance to win.
Bethpage,
where he won the U.S. Open. Yeah. And then, of course, there's Pebble, where he won by 15. But I'm going to pick Phil there. And then, of course, we got the Open Championship.
Yeah, it's going to be a great year. Jim, thanks for your time.
Kyle,
do you have a Masters pick, by the way? Is this too early?
I don't. It's in development right now.
I was forced to make a Masters pick on January 1.
Who did you take?
I took Justin Thomas. He's gotten better every year.
Yeah.
Great ball fight for there. I'm excited to see him.
Yeah, well, if he wins, my call is going to be as the ball goes in the hole at the 72nd hole. As you heard on January 1st from Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas takes the green jacket.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for your
time.
Thanks
for all you do.
Yeah.
My call is going to be as the ball goes in the hole at the 72nd hole. As you heard on January 1st from Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas takes the green jacket. Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas, Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas, Justin Thomas, Justin Thomas, Kyle Porter.
And our second conversation here is going to be with the great Lexi Thompson. You mentioned, teased it earlier, a lot of talk here about, you know, the excitement of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You know, she's a competitor, man. I don't get to spend as much time digging into the game as you do, but seems like y'all had a pretty good conversation here.
Yeah, she's great. I had forgotten how old she is. I think she's like 23. Can that be correct? Am I 10 years older? Am I 10 years older than Lexi Thompson?
Oh, that's definitely possible.
But she comes off, I guess my point there, she comes off like she's 33 or older. Like she just, I think when you have that level of fame and success at her age, it just sort of automatically matures you. And so the way that she talks about the women's game, the way that she talks about her place within golf broadly, and just the way, I don't know, she just has this sort of air about her that's mature in a way that I guess made me stunned to remember that she's 23 years old. So I was impressed by her, just her maturity, her mannerisms, the way she carries herself. She's impressive, and she's very... She's open and thoughtful without giving you everything, which I think is a learned skill. It's a difficult place to try and get there. And she'll talk about whatever. She'll talk about her struggles, her, you know, kind of issues with the game and how far she's come over the last few years. She's very into like growing the game and growing the women's game. And I don't know, she was a lot of fun to talk to and really enjoyed it.
All right, let's dig into it.
Is it more difficult to work to get to kind of the mountaintop, so to speak, or to maintain that, to stay there? Because your entire career leading up to the last couple of years was working to get there. Mm-hmm. And then some people would say, well, you got there. How hard is it to stay there?
It is hard to stay there. A lot of people don't realize that. You know, it's not easy getting there because it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication. But to maintain wins and everything, because there's a lot of expectations from a lot of people from the outside world. If you're not winning every year, they're like, oh, what happened to her? Or is she hurt?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we're human. Yeah. You know, we are professional athletes, but we're human. We're going to struggle, and we have to go through things to realize what we're doing wrong and to fix things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a process. And, you know, golf is such an amazing sport. You learn so much about yourself that you have to just keep on going through the struggles and make the successes that much better.
How long did it take you to figure out how to kind of balance the golf side with the non-golf side? Because you're involved in doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
What was that learning curve like?
I'm still learning. No, you know, you learn so much about it. It is important to have that balance. Yeah. And, you know, I took a break this past year in the middle of the year, skipping a very big tournament, the British Open. And that's kind of what I was going through. You know, I was nonstop golfing, grinding, practicing, training. And, you know, I had a lot going on in the last 2 years on and off the golf course. And I was struggling mentally. I wasn't in a good place. Yeah. And it's something that I needed. I needed the break to enjoy my life, enjoy my family, and realize what makes me very happy and bring that out to the golf course instead of it all being about golf.
Yeah.
And I really wanted people to realize that I am human. I'm going through things, and I'm not just this perfect, ideal person.
Right.
And, but yeah, that's what I wanted to tell people, and I needed that break.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm still working on it, getting the help and everything. So it's a process, but you have to learn it, and golf is just a sport.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to get your opinion on a tournament that you actually won't be playing in this year, which is the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Mm-hmm.
Women playing for the first time in a tournament setting at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
How exciting is that for the game for women's golf?
I think it's great for women's golf. I think it's definitely showing how much golf is growing on the women's side. Yeah. That's what we want to see. And you know, I wish we were playing. It would be nice if the professionals were playing Augusta. It's on my bucket list. But, you know, at least the amateurs are getting to play.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think it's still the same week as A&A or something like that. So they have to kind of choose one or the other, which is unfortunate because some of the top amateurs do get invites to the A&A. But I think it's great for the women's golf, just showing how much it is growing. We want to see that. That's why there's so many girls' golf programs now as well. And I think that's just, you know, a plus having that tournament. I mean, that's a big deal. It's a huge honor just to be able to go there.
For sure. What are the other ways that since you've gotten into the sport that you've seen growth on the women's side and maybe can continue to into the future?
I think the main thing that I've seen is basically the girls' golf program. I'm ambassador for like the PGA Junior League, which is a great golf program, and the LPGA USGA girls golf program, ambassador for that as well. And just to see the amount of little girls that are out there following us with their flags and just see the smile on their faces, I think it makes my day.
Yeah.
And it just shows how much golf is growing as a sport. But on the women's side, we need that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the LPGA does great with. There's a lot of great role models out there. We sign all the autographs. We take the pictures. And, you know, we want to leave the sport in a better place than we came in.
For sure. Well, you're doing a great job so far,
and
I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Lexi.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good stuff there from Kyle and Lexi. You did a good job. You know, you get
thanks, Chip.
You ask thoughtful questions. You get Jim Nantz excited and telling you that he's going to shout you out for the Justin Thomas win. So, I mean, that was that. Like when he does an 18th hole or 72nd hole. Little read like that, he knows that that's really giving people what they want.
Oh yeah. Well, he walks up to the set that we were at, and we sit down, and he just he looks into the camera, "Hello, friends."
Oh my gosh.
Okay, let's go. Let's
he's self-aware.
It.
He's so self-aware.
But he does it in a way that doesn't come off as like, I don't know. It's the way he does it is endearing, I think, which is, again, a skill.
A skill, for sure. All right, real quick break, and then we'll get into Sean Martin from PGAtour.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
And now it's our pleasure to welcome back to the show, good friend Sean Martin, PGAtour.com. Sean, you were there at Torrey Pines while Kyle was just hobnobbing and networking and, you know, doing all the easy stuff. You were the Capital J journalist on the scene at Torrey Pines. How's your week and weekend been?
I'm good. This is my Super Bowl week, so I'm ready. I am locked and loaded. I couldn't care less about Tom Brady, but we have another sporting event that I think we'll be talking about.
Not only is Hideki the two-time champ at Phoenix. Two times, right, Sean?
Two times, yeah. And then, of course, last year, the WD, my phone just started exploding.
Yeah. But he's also coming in off a week where he finished top five at Torrey.
T3.
A lot of converging things happening for it. Sean's not even going to watch the Super Bowl. He's just going to watch a replay of Phoenix after it happens on Sunday.
I'm just hoping for like a 10-man playoff Hideki, and I don't even care who goes into the first half of the Super Bowl. People are losing their mind, and I'll just be excited as a pig in mud.
That happened
2 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the greatest Super Bowl ever. It was even better than Namath.
I was watching at the house of a Wake Forest grad, and there were more TVs in the house. Because wasn't Webb in contention?
Yeah, it was Webb and Hideki.
Yeah.
More TVs on the end of the Waste Management Open than there were on the Star Spangled Banner and opening of the Falcons and the Patriots. It was a very, very, very bizarre for the moment, especially considering how much of the Super Bowl takes up everywhere else. But, man, the Waste Management Open, this week we got, and you know, we can get into more detailed expert picks, but Hideki, Rahm, Kuchar, Phil, Ricky, Xander. Like we've still got this is as exciting of an event without, even though it does not have the Tiger factor. I think our field strength is still up to par of any of the other events that are here in this West Coast swing.
For sure, I think a lot of the the younger set especially loves this event. They grew up watching it on TV. They grew up watching the 16th hole, and I think they love being a part of it.
Is the 16th hole overrated? Who's got that take?
It is. It's almost gone so far the other way that it might be underrated again. I don't know. I don't know where we're at on the spectrum with it, but I actually like the 17th hole better. Is that a okay take?
It's an artisan take. I feel like things have walked back from the 16th. Like I feel like it was peak 16th hole madness, and then I think people were kind of in fear of ruining it and taking it too far, and so I do think things have backed off a little bit.
Now it's rightly rated. Yeah, saying that the 17th hole is actually better is like when you do one of those off the wall is actually better than Thriller, Inner Visions is actually better than Songs in the Key of Life. Like you're picking between the things that are good, because the whole finish to TPC Scottsdale is awesome. The whole 16, 17, 18, it's fun. What's up?
Do you have a guess there, Sean? Is Sean still there?
Hello.
What's going on over there?
I think so. You know that Travelers Championship speaker you have?
Yes.
So my son loves to just hit the on and off button because of the noise it makes. And I think they walked in the house from running errands. I think he took it in the car with him. And so it's turned on and in Bluetooth. And so the sound went from my phone to that speaker until I figured out what was going on. And then I...
this is big time first world problems.
Bluetooth just all of a sudden throwing everybody off. Big time.
We're doing a podcast in three different states, and it's getting interrupted by my son's Bluetooth speaker. Is like the ultimate first world problem
that we got for free from a golf tournament.
That we got for free.
A piece of swag too. Yeah. All right. So let's one couple quick clean out the notebook items from Torrey Pines. Something that you wrote about was Tiger's first, was it his first professional or his first win at Torrey Pines?
Yeah, first professional win. I would have probably should have gone back and found, you know, Jimmy McGee, who he beat in the final round of the 1987 Junior World, but I couldn't do it.
Hold on. Is that a real
name? Not the real name. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, keep going.
I love those stories, though. I love those stories. There was that kid that Steve talked about he lost to when he was 14, and he still remembers his name, and the poor kid's probably like a, you know, manager at a Chick-fil-A, and Jordan Spieth's a multimillionaire. No, it was a great story. I didn't realize that Billy Ray Brown was a little bit more of a player than I thought. He won an NCAA championship. He won three times on tour. He was one shot out of the playoff with Hale Irwin at the U.S. Open. It's a pretty promising career, derailed by injuries. He came back too soon, basically, one year to try to play in the tour championship because he loved Pinehurst. And, like, you could still hear it in his voice that he was still upset at himself for that decision because it basically ruined this career that was off to a good start. And so, anyway, so injuries all these years. One top 10 in the previous 5 years. He's going up against Tiger, Torrey. You know, Tiger's going through this big swing change. There's questions about whether Tiger can, you know, is going to be as good as we thought he was, et cetera. And they go head to head, and Tiger needs to eagle the last hole to win. So it's a total like 18 hole Sunday showdown. And then Billy Ray Brown basically never finishes 70th, better than 70th in another tour event, plays like 25 more events, misses 22 of the cuts, and then Tiger goes on to win eight times that year. He wins nine times the next year. Makes history. And it's just kind of this crazy, like, their paths met at Torrey Pines, and then they just went in completely opposite directions.
Tiger ended him.
Yeah, the goods were there, and then Tiger took his goods.
that's a way better summation. That's pretty much it.
That's like dunked on, and you can't come back from it. When you get dunked on that bad, you're like, well, that's it. I'm done. I got to shut it down.
Billy Ray Brown is Frederick Weiss.
There you go.
Whatever his name is.
Yes.
How old was BRB at the time, Sean?
He's 38. So he's had some years. He's still had some tread on the tires.
So that was in 99, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
What did you make, real quick, speaking of Tiger at Torrey, what did you make of Tiger saying that he couldn't figure out the greens on like during the tournament?
It's interesting you said that because I've read things about how just like basically our eye, you know, degeneration as we get older, like green reading does go down as a skill. And even Phil at Desert Classic was talking about that, you know, for guys his age, he's a little bit older than Tiger, but 5 years or so, that green putting and driving are the two things that go down the most for players their age. Driving because they lose speed as they get older. And he didn't really go into the putting, but I've heard that green reading does go down a bit. As you get older, you just, you know, your eyesight gets a little worse and you kind of miss those little things in the green. I could definitely see that. I mean, I feel like we see Tiger just barely miss a lot of putts. Not like his, like, stroke is horrible, but we just always see him, you know, we just see one arm swings out and then he comes in and says, oh, I just couldn't get the speed today or something like that. And, you know, he shoots a 70 that could have been a 66. I feel like that's a pretty common scene the last few years.
Well, I told Kyle that the greatest carrot that we can dangle in front of golf fans for Tiger Woods is that all of his game looks tight and he's all over the cup, but he just can't make them. Because that's going to have us coming back. Because you're just seeing, you're like, oh, well, all he's got to do is just start making some putts. Oh, yeah, well, these putts are going to fall. Like, we will continue to show up week after week and, like, frustratingly watch these 70s that could have been 67s or 66s, but still come away with all the positivity and hope that's going to have us coming back for the next week, because this, what we saw at Torrey Pines was a game and a form that it's not hard to see how things could break. And then all of a sudden, and this is something that Jim Nantz talked with Kyle about, then all of a sudden we're starting to get to, you know, win 80, win 81, win 82. And then we start to look at 83 a little bit differently, which I think is probably one of the more intriguing big picture Tiger Woods conversations in golf.
Yeah. Last week was just like the worst Tiger week to try to cover because it was like, yeah, you know, like he looked really good. He looked good enough. He could definitely win on the tour this year, but also he wasn't that good because he wasn't really in contention. And it was just like, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Like, there's not this great storyline of like, oh my gosh, like he's going to win the tournament or he missed the cut by five. It was, yeah, Tiger Woods is pretty good at golf. Nothing new here. He still could win, but he'll have to play better to do so. Back to you.
Sean, well, yeah, there you go. Sean, who last week, Chip and I talked about this a little bit on Sunday, but
Hideki.
Besides Hideki, who last week changed your perception of what they're going to do in 2019 the most?
I'm going to say Justin Rose, only for the sake that the fact that I was just like a big, that T34, the Desert Classic, because he finished outside the top 25 just three times in his last 33 worldwide starts. I was like, yeah. This weird sounding equipment company, he's out. Big mistake, shouldn't have done it. And so I was a pretty quick sell. I mean, I knew he was rusty, and I didn't think that like this was going to be disastrous, but I was like, all right, he might just, you know, go from number one to number three in the world. And then, you know, he comes out and he plays so well, hits his irons really well. And I mean, he had a good point too. And he said that a set of blades, like Ford's irons, they're basically a chunk of metal. So there's only so much you can do with them. So like, they're not going to mess you up that much. And so I think for him, I think my overreactionary take after Desert Classic was the place like, oh no, you know, Justin Rose is still really, really good at golf, even if he did change his equipment.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. I overreacted to the T34 too, just because that was a bad field. He'd been playing so well. It wasn't a difficult, you know, course. And maybe he struggled a little because it wasn't a difficult course. Somebody like Justin Rose, obviously, I think plays better when you're put on difficult courses, like we saw at Torrey, even though Torrey was playing easier than normal. But I think my answer might be Adam Scott. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I expected from him. I don't ever think about Adam Scott. Like I never, like when we're talking about the top guys and the major winners and all this stuff, he just eludes my like perception of the PGA Tour. He's not in my purview. Like I don't think about him. And so I guess for him to like re-enter and reemerge, not that he went anywhere, you're just like, oh yeah, Adam Scott's unbelievable at golf. And I don't, like, I think everybody made such a big deal about like the science of putting with the pin in, whereas I think the actual benefit that it offers somebody like Adam Scott is just the mental engagement. Like if he thinks he's better with the pin in, putting with the pin in, then he's probably better. And so I think that part of it intrigues me about the rest of his 2019.
Don't our ups and downs with Adam Scott over the last 4 to 5 years, I guess, don't they mostly stem from the green, from the changes in the putter?
Yeah, I mean, he has to ball straight to death to win. The thing, too, is he also went to arm lock putting last week, so that was a big change as well, which helped. And so now I'm just waiting for him to go single length irons, and maybe he'll just go full Bryson.
Does Kuchar do the arm lock, or is that just Bryson?
No, Kuchar, Bryson, Chipsboy, Webb, Keegan does it. So a lot of guys have had success with it lately.
Yeah, I think that's where with Adam Scott, I think that you should not be surprised when things come together, but at the same time, they've got to be ever so tenuous. Like this, how about this? Adam Scott wins between now and the end of the season 0.5.
It's hard not to go over, right?
I think I'd still go under. I think we see him in contention. I don't know if Adam Scott's a win in the winner's circle the rest of the year. I think he's playing better, and I think that it's fun to watch him just because when he has it going, it is an entertaining viewing experience as a golf fan. But I don't think that Adam Scott necessarily has captured something that is going to propel him to the front among what is going to be a very, very competitive and crowded leaderboards for the rest of the season.
I think what's fascinating, and to juxtapose him and Justin Rose, because they were playing together on Sunday, I don't think many people would. I think most people would have to look this up, but Adam Scott's had a pretty like a better career than Justin Rose.
Wow,
like pretty objectively. Like I don't. I mean, he's got the Masters win. Rose has the U.S. Open.
And
he's won four.
The players.
Well, okay, I was getting there. The other major that he won, and then he's won 14 times on the PGA Tour. He was number one. I guess you could argue some of Rose's European stuff, but I think that Scott's had probably a better career, and I think he's younger too. So it's that part of it is interesting because I don't think that anybody would say that Adam Scott is better than Justin Rose right now.
Yeah, Adam Scott was number one for a brief time, I feel like, though. And I feel like Justin Rose, I mean, he gets taken over next week probably if Brooks wins. I haven't checked, but I don't know. It feels like, of course, we say this, Rose just won. It feels like Rose could hold this number one spot for a while. I agree with your Adam Scott take, and maybe it's just recency bias, but I don't know. Justin Rose, just I have trouble admitting that you're right, even though it's a well thought out theory.
By the way, they were born 14 days apart, so Adam Scott's actually older than him by 14 days.
You know, I just
Rose had time to catch up.
does Adam Scott have a gold medal? No. that's just another funny part of the Justin Rose Kyle, you and I have touched on this a little bit, but there's a lot of data and a lot of data points that you point to, but they often feel like Indianapolis Colts division championship banners, right? Like it's he won the FedEx Cup. It's like, well, you know what? I forgot that he won the FedEx Cup because all I cared about at East Lake was Tiger. And
yeah,
he won a gold medal and he won at Torrey. But like, man, I kind of feel like everybody was talking about other people at Torrey. And I just, if he holds the number one spot for a while, as you're predicting, Sean, I think that maybe by the time we get to the middle of the season, and if he has maybe one more win and is in contention at Augusta, then maybe we start to change our tune on Justin Rose. But yeah, right now it just feels like division title banners.
Yeah, I think Adam Scott and Justin Rose both kind of get overlooked just because like they kind of just make it look easy and everyone just assumes they're good and almost kind of take them for granted. I love that list of courses that Justin Rose has won on. And I don't even know quite what to do with the Olympic gold medal, but I think that counts for something. I don't know. Maybe Rose's career to me has more intrigue because of the whole start where he missed his first 21 cuts and he was 18 years old. And then, you know, and doing it at reaching number one now at age 38 when there's so many young players having all the success, but just him consistently getting better and then him turning himself into this great putter. Whereas, you know, Adam Scott made his hay pre-anchoring ban and then kind of really went sideways a little bit like most guys after the anchoring ban went into effect. That I don't know, for me, I just Rose or Scott might have more wins and all that stuff, but for me the Rose career trajectory and the fact that he's done it, you know, with the short putter and at this age and didn't have to rely on anchoring, all that just kind of makes me like Rose more. And then feel like too, Rose in the coming years will make up some of that ground that he's behind Scott on, and then this won't really be a debate.
Through their first 250 PGA Tour starts, Justin Rose won 6 times. Adam Scott won 14 times.
Yeah, so it's definitely recency bias. I'll admit that. But
all right, how about this? Over under Justin Rose wins between now and the end of the year, 1.5.
Are we talking PGA Tour only or worldwide?
What's his schedule look like outside? I think that Justin Rose will be a winner 2 more times.
Yeah, well, he wins like 6 times in like October and November because he plays Turkey, plays like the Indonesian Masters. So I need to know like what my parameters are here.
Okay, PGA Tour only. You're even thinking about it.
I'll go under 1.5.
What about you, Sean?
I'm going to go under and say he just gets one more. But you're talking about a guy that does play in Europe, and then in America he's only playing the biggest event. So
yeah,
to win one, it would still be a good season. I'm gonna go under. All but right. I had to think about it.
Let's turn our attention to the weekend action. Did you get a chance to walk with Hideki at all at Torrey? Because our featured groups coverage largely omitted the focus was elsewhere, but the stars and the groups and the super groups were elsewhere on the course, and so I didn't get my eyes on a lot of Hideki's round. But man, you know, nothing about the stats and what little we did show suggested that there should be anything expected. We should not expect anything from Hideki other than a strong performance. Like, what did you see from as the president of the Hideki Matsuyama fan club? What did you see from him?
If he walked with him, it was only from 250 feet away, according to the letter of the law.
The current litigation.
Yeah, Porter stole my joke. That's what I was going with. No, I mean, it was pretty much what you would think it was from Hideki. He flushed it, hit it amazingly. I don't know if you guys saw, I finally made my colleagues at the PGA Tour put up a short compilation of his bunker shots from the week, because he almost holed that one bunker shot at 18 on Saturday.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, he was just a menace, hitting 3 wood from the sand, land softly and stops, and
that was
like 10 feet from the hole.
That was a sick shot on Sunday. That was unbelievable.
And that was one on 9. Then on 18, he hit hybrid out of the bunker over the water. I was incensed. It was only worth a 0.8 strokes gain. I felt like it should have been worth at least 2. He hit it over the water. I mean, most guys would have laid up out of there. Most guys would not have the just bravery that Hideki displayed there. But he hit 95% of his greens last week, which is good.
Yes.
With negative strokes gain putting, as you expect. But, I mean, that's kind of pretty Hideki-ish. It's just, I think that, you know, he, for whatever reason, I think he loves these greens at Phoenix and putts well there. And so, I mean, that's the only thing missing from him. So when he finds a place he's comfortable putting, I mean, literally no one can beat him. And that's what we've seen.
2 wins, scoring average across 17 rounds is a 67.41.
Worst finish is 4th place, besides that tragic WD last year.
Tragic. Certainly tragic. Kyle, what are you expecting from Matsuyama?
You know, it did feel like Torrey was the first time where it felt like, okay, he's fully healthy. I know he played well in the fall, and I don't know. I think he had a couple events in the fall where he – I'll have to look at his schedule from the fall. But Torrey was the first time where you're like, okay, Hideki's Hideki again. And for him, it's perfect timing, obviously, because Phoenix is coming up. And I don't know. I mean, it just clicks with some guys at some places. Do we count the he doesn't get the credit for like 3 straight tournament wins if he wins this year, does he?
No.
Historically, no. In my books, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, well, of course. No, I mean,
so are you saying Hideki's back?
Yeah, I was trying to say everything except for that phrase. I was trying to say it without saying that phrase, but yes, I believe that.
Why would you hesitate from Hideki backness? Is that just because you deal with so much Texas backness that you're a little bit salty towards it?
I hate the phrase. He finished 4th at the Tour Championship, 4th at Dell Technologies. So he had a good run in like August, September last year, but Torrey was the first time where it really like clicked for me.
All right, we'll get into our more specific picks and expectations for the weekend right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, so we got Hideki, as mentioned. John Rahm coming off the 62 and then the temper tantrum on the second round. Kuchar, Simpson, Phil, Gary Woodland, Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Tony Finau. Who's standing out for... let's say, throw to you, Sean. Who else in the non-Hideki division are you really excited to see or keeping your eye on for the weekend?
I'm going to go Rahm. He was finishing like 5th at this event when he was still in college.
Yeah.
And he's playing great. It hasn't quite put it all together. But, you know, he won the Hero, and then he started this year 8th, 6th, 5th. I just think that he's really, really close and just, I mean, a win is a matter of time, and no better place than here. Obviously, big support. He's the ASU guy. But, yeah, I mean, he's played here since he was in college, and even before he had tour status, was finishing 5th here. So now you come in as a even more polished and experienced professional, and I feel like everything adds up for him.
Kyle?
Mine's Gary Woodland.
Mm.
I'm into Gary Woodland right now. He was obviously awesome at Kapalua.
That's a soundbite. You know, I'm just telling you, that's a soundbite.
That's fine.
I'm into Gary Woodland right now.
I'm into Gary Woodland right now. He's been awesome. If you look at his last, going back to last year, his last, I don't know, 10 or 15 starts, I can't find him on the, here it is. So he goes, he starting with the Tour Championship, or I guess starting with the BMW last year, T12, T11, T5, second, T10, T41, T8, second, and then he missed the cut at Sony, and then T9 at Farmers last week. So not only did he win this event last year, but he's also coming in off a top 10. He hasn't really finished outside the top 10 in the last, 4 months, other than one or two tournaments. So I think he's going to have a really, really good week again. And I actually probably am going to end up picking him to win the tournament.
I am confused, concerned, and curious. Those are triple C's right there, about what we get from Ricky. Cause that was quite a, I guess I wasn't as plugged in, for Saturday and Sunday, but Fowler was, he was a healthy set of strokes away from contention. So I don't know how much, attention got paid to the specifics of those rounds anyway, but to have sort of the up and down week, and we were going crazy over this fashion icon, his untucked look and the shirt, it just seems like there's a lot about, we've got the change to TaylorMade going into Torrey Pines. It seems like there's a lot of noise around Ricky Fowler, and I am concerned that the golf might not be matching it, but the form doesn't look terrible. Guys, help me out with this cognitive dissonance between, it seems like the promotion engine is really ramping up for Ricky to have a good year, and yet there's, still kind of the same shrug when we actually see the performance on the course, when you just look at his finishes in the last, two, three seasons.
I mean, I go back to him just not playing well at Torrey Pines. He hadn't made a cut there since 15, I think. He had missed three in a row, which kind of stinks for him, because obviously, he's still sponsored by Farmers, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like this one of your sponsors, you can't make the cut at their event. I'm sure if he wasn't sponsored, I mean, you see guys going
and he's
in
from
and
San Diego too, or the Marietta, like the San Diego area, right?
Yeah, it's as close to a hometown event as he's going to get. It's probably like an hour away, his home is.
I'm going to have to see a lot more than that to be down on his 2019. Now, we can talk about the winning thing or whatever, but I there's not a lot of angst for me over finishing outside the top 50 at Torrey Pines.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I think that it is just, if he had played well there in the past or more recently, I'd probably be more worried. I think as far as the noise, I mean, I think that's just Ricky's life now. It's just, there's always the noise and the commercials and whatnot. But I think that, I know Kyle's a big advocate of winning is overrated, and I do think there's something to it of like, I mean, yeah, he has not won as much as I think probably he would think that he was going to at this point in his career either, but he's also been like ranked 10th in the world for like the last 3 years, and there's something to it. And so I don't know. I mean, ball changes are a pretty big deal. I mean, we saw that with Bubba. Granted, a TaylorMade ball, I think, is a lot better than what Bubba switched to. Not that concerned. But
they had a big booth at the merchandise show.
I'm sure they did. But yeah, I'm not too concerned. I think that, again, it's just a course he doesn't play well at. And I don't know if it's because the same thing with Torrey last week. Everyone's talking about how easy it was. No, what a disgrace. The Torrey's is easy. Da da da. I mean, the greens were soft. It had rained. But, like, I'm walking by there and looking at this rough, and I'm like, if we were playing out here with no marshals or whatever, like, it would be hard to find balls. This is, like, 4-inch rough. It's thick. And so I do think that, I don't know if, we had that one memorable drive where he blew it way right and said four. And I don't know if he wasn't driving it well or if because his swing is flat, it's harder to get the ball out of the rough and elevated, but the rough there is penal, and so it is easy to have a tough week there. Like, because when you do miss the fairways, you do have to scramble, and you can't fire flags. And so, as much as everyone was talking about what a disgrace Torrey was for being this easy, like, it wasn't that easy. These guys are just really, really, really good.
Yeah. This will also mark the return. Did you by any chance, Sean? Have you, uh, Did you get a chance to hear Jim Nance's Kyle Porter approved call that's already in the can for Augusta?
No.
All right.
Hang tight. Part of the video, then. I think I've heard about this, but.
Oh, no. This might have been before the video ended. This is why you come here, because we've got the raw.
My call is going to be as the ball goes in the hole at the 72nd hole. As you heard on January 1st from Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas takes the green jacket.
I mean.
Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas, Kyle Porter, Justin Thomas, Justin Thomas, Justin Thomas, Kyle Porter.
And then just intersplice that with, I think about that all the time, and just.
I'm really into Gary Woodland right now. Kyle Porter.
Good little story. A guy I know, Conrad Schindler, was a rookie last year, and he played Colonial, and he ran into Jim Nance. He had Jim Nance record his voicemail message on his phone. It was something like, you know, Conrad's on his quest to qualify for the 2019 Masters, so he can't get with you right now, but he'll get back to you as soon as possible. So I thought that was a pretty awesome. I always love those stories when, like, tour players, professional athletes, like, meet some guy and they just become a fan like the rest of us.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
JT coming. All right, JT, not necessarily this is a place where you're expecting the best out of him. Kyle, I'll go. Do you think that he will finish above or below on the leaderboard 9.5?
I think he'll finish closer to first.
Okay.
So I guess that's above.
Above.
He finished T17 last year. I wonder. I mean, I guess it just works out. He missed the cut before that. Why does he play Phoenix? Do we know?
I don't know. Being a woke millennial, I don't know. He finished 10th at Torrey in a sponsor exemption years ago before he had tour status, but then he really hasn't been back that much. And I think, honestly, like, Torrey, it's beautiful, and the weather was great this week, but there are weeks where, man, it can just get, like, it's just cold, and you're out there kind of early, and, I mean, Phoenix has frost delays sometimes, but I don't know. I think guys like being a part of the whole hubbaloo. Also, a lot of guys, if they don't like Poana, you know, it gets bumpy. I think that is a big thing. Like, you see a lot of guys, like Kevin Kisner and some other Georgia guys, like, they just don't play Pebble, they don't play Torrey, and, like, they've made it clear that it's because of the Poa. And so you could have some guys who just, because of the Poana, don't want to play either.
Yeah.
Wow.
I said this on Sunday, but I expect JT. I think JT's going to go on a run over the next couple months, and maybe it starts here. Who knows? But yeah, anytime he's in the field, I think a top 10 finish should be expected.
All right, Sean, before we get out of here, any lingering big expert picks, predictions, thoughts that you want to throw on the board before we get into the weekend action?
Hideki's back.
I got a number for you. So DataGolf has course history going for TPC Scottsdale going back to 2010. And it's got the top guys in terms of strokes gained against the field, and it's adjusted to field strength. So I'm going to start at number I'm going to start at number 5. Webb Simpson is 5th, 2 strokes gained on the field per round, which is really good. Brendan Steele is 4th. Somebody named Chris Couch is 3rd. What am I missing there, Sean?
I mean, he won on tour. I don't know. How far going back? I mean, he hasn't played much in the last 10 years.
2010.
Wow.
So anyway, maybe DataGolf had a slip up there. But John Rahm is 2nd at 2.4. So John Rahm is 2nd at 2.4. Hideki's 1st at 3.4.
Woo!
That's absurd.
I mean, literally, his finishes are 4th, 2nd, 1st, 1st. I don't know what you guys want from him.
that's preposterous. 3.4 strokes gained per round.
When we look back at Hideki's career, we're gonna, just like we think of Tiger and Torrey, it's gonna be Hideki and Phoenix.
Do you think which one is more likely? Rory never wins the Masters or Hideki never wins a major?
Oh wow, gosh. I think it's more likely that think it's more likely that Rory never wins the Masters. I'm a big just odds of like, look, it's one tournament every year. Like, just the odds are against him. Just it's one week. You know, you could pick some random, like, you can make that the Genesis Open, and but just because it's any one tournament, the odds are against them. And I don't know. I think, and now Hideki's got four shots. I like Hideki in four tournaments versus Rory in one tournament a year.
Who's got more health concerns, though?
Because
if I'm picking Rory Masters, which is where my initial thought was, part of the explanation was as much Hideki-related, where, yes, you have four majors a year versus one major a year, but also given what we've seen from him over the last 3 to 4 seasons, you know, can you expect 100% Hideki is back at four majors a year? I don't know if you can.
I think you can. You know, I think obviously he used to work, you know, tirelessly on his game, was known for just never leaving the range, and probably that wear and tear cut up. You know, but as we now know, like when we didn't know before, he has a child and a wife. And so that balance in his life.
You knew. You finally, probably knew.
I'm finally revealing that he has a family. We now know that he has that balance in his life necessary to, you know, not be on the range all day.
Okay. He is Sean Martin. You can follow him on Twitter at PGA Tour S Martin. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chip.
Thanks, Chip.